It is Monday, March 11th. I'm Scott Seidenberg.
And I'm AJ Hoffman.
Steelers country. Let's ride.
And the conference tournaments are set.
Here comes the Vegas truth.
This is Straight Out of Vegas.
We are Straight Out of Vegas AM, your daily destination for sports conversation with a Vegas lean. Here's what you need to know to start your day.
Russell Wilson finds a new home in the Steel City.
Baker Mayfield back with the Tampa Bay Bucks.
And all the regular season college basketball games are played. It is tourney time. Scott, what is the Vegas lead?
Well, let's talk about the Oscars last night. Did you see Jimmy Kimmel's monologue? What was your thoughts? Did you enjoy?
I did not watch one moment of the Oscars.
All right. Well, I'll sum it up for you here.
Thank you.
Favorites went 17-6. So 17-6 to the favorites. There were more upsets than in normal, I don't want to say normal, than in, yeah, I guess in recent
history.
A
typical year, yeah.
Yeah, usually it's like two or three upsets, but there were six upsets on this year's awards ballot. Some of them were like slight underdogs. So there were upsets in Best Actress, Animated Feature, Makeup and Hair, Documentary Short, Costume Design, and Best Sound. Some of them, like I said, short dogs, where the favorite was minus 160 and the dog was, you know, plus 120. Some of them were the favorite was minus 175 to minus 200 and the dog was plus 150. But like there was a couple of long shot dogs where it was the favorite was minus 250. The dog was upwards north of plus 200 plus, you know, two and change. So congratulations to the awards winners from last night's Oscars. Again, favorites go 17-6 out of the 23 awards.
So the Iron Claw did not win. The Iron Claw did not win an Oscar.
No, no, sir. No, it did not.
Wildly disappointing.
No, Oppenheimer ruled the day, winning the bulk of the awards. All right, let's talk about the quarterbacks. Russell Wilson, Steelers country. Let's do something that involves steel. Last night, Adam Schefter breaking
let's
the news.
Weld.
Yes. Steelers country. Let's weld. I like that. So, he's going to end every press conference like that. I'm happy to be here. You know, just want to compete. All due respect to Kenny Pickett. He's a great quarterback, but I'm going to compete for that starting job. And, you know, Steelers country, let's weld.
That's right. Love it. I'm here for it.
So Adam Schefter broke the news last night. We all expected this. The Steelers were minus 300 up on DraftKings to be the team that Russell Wilson takes his first snap for in 2024-2025. And I tweeted out last night, just a reminder for folks that have that bet, and there were a couple of our listeners that tweeted me their bet slips, they don't cash until he takes a snap. So while it's a favorite right now because he is signing with the Steelers, like I talked about on the Dream Pod, there's a chance gets traded during the preseason, there's injury, there's a lot of things that could go wrong for you to not cash this bet. But the one bet you can cash is Russell Wilson signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, this is, I don't think it's a big surprise, given that it's such a low risk thing for the Steelers, because if, you know, if Russell's the guy, if he's still got it, then it's great for the Steelers. And if he doesn't, then there's not much downside really. Like you've already said that Kenny Pickett was going to be your guy anyway. Just the idea that you don't have to pay him makes this so much easier, because having to take the financial risk that the Broncos had is certainly unappealing. But they're the ones that have to pay for that. So I think this is a perfect place for Russ to see if he's still got something. I don't know if he does, but I think this is a good place for him to figure it out. And if he does, it's on this deal. He'll get another deal next year, and he'll probably end up making some decent coin again. But and not that he won't make decent coin this year. It'll just be from the Broncos. But I'm guessing his next contract will look more like a more in line with the higher end quarterbacks that what those guys are getting now.
Well, I do like the fact that it is a 1 year team friendly deal, and the Broncos obviously paying the $38 million and all that stuff. The other thing that I do like is that in Arthur Smith's offense, it's a lot of play action, and Russell Wilson does very well in play action.
Sure.
Now there's not many deep balls in the Arthur Smith offense, which, you know, that's a good, another strength of Russell Wilson is throwing that deep ball. But I think in the play action style of the Arthur Smith offense, if they, you know, have a good running game established that they can lean on, I think Russell Wilson can do very well in this offense.
When we talk about not many deep balls in the Arthur Smith offense, let's also keep in mind, like, what Arthur Smith's had to work with at quarterback really for most of his career.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hasn't had a guy who's capable of, you know, the deep throws that Russell Wilson is, or it was, who knows what Russell Wilson really is today, but you know, he's not exactly had a murderer's row of quarterbacks. So as much as respect as he's garnered, like with his offenses, the idea now that he's going to have a guy who's, you know, can make these deep throws gives him another option. And maybe Arthur Smith looks even better, you know, now that he's got that part of the game unlocked.
Yeah. So like Steelers offense, I'm sure the wide receivers of the Steelers are happier today knowing that Russell Wilson is coming aboard. By the way, the latest odds up on DraftKings, Steelers to win the AFC North has been upgraded to +1200. They are still the fourth favorite in their division to win said division.
I think that makes sense. Like that's about where what it should be. They didn't get, you know, this isn't like they went out and got Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes. They got Russell Wilson. And what we've seen the last couple of years of Russell Wilson, it's hard to be super pumped about it. So given the rest of their roster, yeah, I think it's certainly an upgrade, but I don't think it's it should have been some massive jump for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. I don't have different expectations of the Steelers than I did a couple weeks ago.
Elsewhere, the Tampa Bay Bucks and Baker Mayfield agreed to a 3-year, $100 million deal. This is what we all expected. Baker in a 1 year prove it, maybe a stopgap type of contract last year, played well enough that the Bucks said, "This is our guy." And he is going to make $30 million guaranteed this year, $30 million guaranteed next year, and $20 million guaranteed next year out of the $30 million, and then $40 million in 2026. There's also $5 million per year in incentives, so the max value of the contract could be $115 million for Baker Mayfield, starting quarterback, Tampa Bay Bucks.
Good for Baker. This, I don't know how you feel about the money that he's getting. This feels very Daniel Jonesy to me. It feels like, man, we saw the upside, then you pay the upside, and it's like, man, should we have done that? And I'm not sure that Baker Mayfield, like, this is just a lot of money for Baker Mayfield, in my opinion. Could he have, you know, way more in the tank than I thought he did? Sure. But man, this is a big investment, and to his credit, he proved it on a prove it deal. But they went all in with this guy, didn't they?
Falcons are +110 to win the NFC South. Bucks are the second favorite at +260. We don't know who the quarterback of the Falcons is going to be.
That's crazy, right there. Like no quarterback.
Yeah, but I think it's because of the anticipation of it either being, you know, someone like Kirk Cousins, or a pretty good top pick.
Yeah, but now when you think about Russell Wilson being off the board, that's one less domino like that they could draw. So yeah, if it is Kirk Cousins, then yeah, the Falcons are the rightful favorite. But I mean, should it be priced in that way? I don't know that that's a smart move.
Well, for the Bucks, I bring up those odds because the division is extremely winnable.
It's so bad. You know, yeah, I think it's the worst division in football.
Yeah, and look at the performance that you had last year. Last year wasn't like a great year. You were 9-8, but you went to the playoffs, and that was because of Baker Mayfield. And so if starting over and getting a young quarterback or seeing what Kyle Trask has is going to make you, you know, a 7-win team or a 6-win team or even worse, like, what would you rather be? Would you rather be a rebuilding team for the next 2-3 years with the hopes of then being a contender, or stick with what you have right now, which is a division winner and a playoff team? Because if Baker does the same thing he did last year, this year, then they could win 9 or 10 games and then once again win the division and go to the playoffs.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you make a good point. And like, as bad as I say that division is, it's not like the Bucks were dreadful last year. Like the Bucks should have some hope. Like nobody thought they could win it last year with Baker. He proved them wrong. I think maybe you're right. Maybe they're better off with Baker than they are than starting over, which is basically what they would have had to do.
And listen, they won a playoff game, right?
Yeah.
You know, they blew out the Philadelphia Eagles in the playoffs. So like Baker got rewarded for what he did last year. And I think that they are in a similar spot this year than they were last year. And that's a pretty good spot to be in, which is the potential to win the division and have a home playoff game. And that's where the Bucks are. Other NFL news, the 49ers are going to release defensive lineman Arik Armstead.
This is a cap casualty thing. This is them. Everybody's fighting for that cap space right now. And I think that they understand that he's still got some game, but they've got a lot of mouths to feed there now in San Francisco. And not a huge surprise to me. I'll say that when you've got the amount of guys that they've got to pay, somebody's going to have to be let go. And yeah, it's not a surprising name necessarily.
Yeah. I guess, you know, again, the money that they're making, you've been around for a long time. You can't pay a guy that much who's been around for that long. You got to make these financial decisions. A decision that was made non-financially, but in the best interest of the future of the program. The Patriots sending Mac Jones to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They get a 6th-round pick as compensation, and we can all but guarantee the Patriots take a quarterback at number 3 overall.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. And listen, Mac Jones is going to go down as a people in hindsight will say, oh, what a bust. But the truth is, Mac Jones is kind of what I expected Mac Jones to be. He was a good college quarterback who didn't seem to have a lot of like physical upside. Very Ken Dorsey-ish, for those who are old enough to remember that. It just didn't feel like his game was going to translate, or he was like going to be a high level passer in the NFL. And that's pretty much how it turned out. So it's really easy to say, well, they should have never used a 1st-round pick on him. But I think that this is like, you could have said that at the time. I think it was pretty obvious when they drafted him that they were reaching. They felt like they needed someone. And if it weren't Bill Belichick doing it, I don't think anybody would have said, oh, Mac Jones, what a great pick here. Mac Jones, he turned into exactly what I figured he would be.
Let's revisit that 2001 draft. Trevor Lawrence, number 1 overall pick. All right. Starting quarterback of the Jags, but are we sold on Trevor? I mean, I think we'd say he's like borderline top 10.
Trevor Lawrence is a good quarterback. Lawrence is just, he's not going to live up to the expectations. But
he's like in that 10 to like 13 range, right? If you were to make a list of quarterbacks in the league.
I mean, I don't know. I'd have a hard time putting him any further than 10, I think. Like I still think there's real upside with him that some of the other guys don't have. So yeah, I guess 10 to 12 is probably fair, but
just going down the list, I'll give you 10 quick quarterbacks. So in the AFC East, we'll go Josh Allen and Tua. Yes?
Sure.
Okay. In the NFC East, we'll go Dak and Jalen Hurts, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Lamar and Burrow in the AFC North. Okay. Jared Goff?
No.
Okay. Kirk Cousins?
No.
All right.
You know what? They're in this a very similar category. Okay. Both of those other guys. It's just
and then of course you got Herbert, you got Mahomes, you got Purdy, and you got I think yeah, he's that borderline, like I said, 10 to 13 range of quarterbacks in the league.
That's fair. I guess my thought is like, and especially with when you mention guys like Cousins and Goff, like if it just feels like there's more upside, more potential with Lawrence than there is with those guys. Mm-hmm. There's more ceiling, and we've seen what those other two guys are long term.
Well, I'm just so that's probably still the book is still out, but we'll see what happens over the next. I think the next couple of years are crucial to the trajectory of this guy's career. Zach Wilson, we already know, first part of his career is done, and we'll see what happens in phase two. Trey Lance, I don't know. when he gets another opportunity, then we'll try and figure it out. Justin Fields, where will he end up this year? Who will he be playing for? What's the next stage of his career? And then Mac Jones, 15th overall, traded down, fighting for a job as a backup. I mean, if Lawrence turns out to not be anything, like if he, has a bad next two seasons,
yep.
what an empty year for quarterbacks, that 2001 draft.
Yeah. But
first round, saying, let's say.
People were trying to make it out like it was some sort of all-time quarterback class. And I don't remember feeling that way because I think plenty of people said, I don't think Zach Wilson's any good. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of people said Mac Jones, he's no good. Justin Fields, there were lots of doubters. I think it's very revisionist to act like it was some sort of great crop. It was an all-timer, or at least an expected all-timer with Lawrence. And then there was just some guys. And I think that it turned out that none of those guys are really better than we thought they were. And Lawrence is not going to be what the expectation was. Especially given what the rest of that draft shook out like, mm-hmm. I mean, if you redraft him, you still take Trevor Lawrence number one because
you've
got to have a starting quarterback. And it turns out mm-hmm. he's the only guy that is certainly an NFL caliber starting quarterback.
The Jaguars co-favorites with the Texans to win the AFC South. The college basketball regular season has come to a close. Conference tournament time and bids already being punched. Yesterday, three more tickets to the big dance were punched. Here's what we know so far. Stetson has won the A-Sun. Congratulations, their first trip to March Madness. Longwood, your winners of the Big South. Drake wins the Missouri Valley, added to Morehead State, who was the first team to punch their ticket, winning the Ohio Valley. So, AJ, congratulations to those four teams. Your thoughts on those four?
No real shockers there. I would say, I mean, Stetson has not done anything like this before, but they haven't had a program for that long to do it, so it's not like wildly shocking. They did beat Austin Peay in the final, who was it's a school that I went to my first semester of college, so I was kind of cheering them along, but mm-hmm. No real surprises. Morehead was clearly the class of the OVC, despite being the three seed. They had a three-way tie for first, and Morehead just went on a down swing at the end of the season. They lost a couple games, but in the tournament, it was pretty clear how much better they were than everyone. And for Stetson in the A-Sun, that was a wild tournament. Like, teams were one seed got knocked out in the first round. I mean, it was there was craziness the whole tournament. So anything could have happened, but Stetson was the two seed, so it wasn't like a wild result there either. And then the Missouri Valley Conference, I mean, mm-hmm. they have to get both those teams in. I mean, what another great game today between Drake and Indiana State. And the assumption is that, they were both kind of borderline on whether or not they'd get an at-large. I think the Missouri Valley is a good enough conference that it's not crazy to give an at-large to that bid. It shouldn't be just a one-bid league. I think Indiana State's a deserving team. But it's going to be a long week for them. Until Sunday, they're going to be sweating and hoping that nothing else crazy happens. But fantastic tournament there, and we got a really good final between Drake and Indiana State, who most people thought all season long were the top two teams.
All right, well, we have two more trips to the NCAA tournament on the line tonight. We have Arkansas State and James Madison in the Sun Belt Championship. What do you like here?
Arkansas State won on a buzzer beater. I thought we were for sure headed to overtime, and I was getting ready to back Appalachian State in overtime. And I mean, with like 0.1 seconds left, the ball gets out of his hand. The red light comes on, but it got in, and it was a clean win for Arkansas State. So they had to have just a crazy high yesterday. James Madison was supposed to dominate yesterday. That was a bet that I lost yesterday. I bet James Madison minus 12, and they were up big early on Texas State. Texas State, they were playing their fourth game in 6 days, a team that doesn't have a lot of depth. I projected it would be tough to keep up with a team like James Madison, who likes to put a good tempo on you. But Texas State played them close. It was a 5-point game at the end, and James Madison had basically a walkover game on Saturday against Marshall. They didn't put up much fight. In the games that they played this season, James Madison went to Arkansas State and won by 4. So typically when I see, okay, who do I like here on a neutral, I look at the two games. These two teams only played once, and it was at Arkansas State. James Madison won. James Madison and App State were the class of this conference. It's hard for me to pick against them in this tournament setting.
And the other ticket being punched, the SoCon Championship tonight, East Tennessee State versus Samford.
Yeah, what a game between East Tennessee State and Chattanooga today. A couple of East Tennessee rivals goes to overtime. East Tennessee gets a win by 1 in overtime. But this is, you know, 3 games in a row that ETSU's played, and Samford's played 2. And neither one of them were particularly ultra stressful. They blew out Mercer in their first game, and then against Furman, it was a pretty comfortable win. Felt like they were in control of that game. Based just on that, and based on the fact that Samford has some of the best depth in the country, and B, runs at a tempo that's just going to be exhausting for an East Tennessee State team that's played, like I said, 3 games in 3 days, including an overtime game yesterday. It's hard to not back Samford here.
Well, let's talk about what we saw over the weekend, and then we'll preview the other games coming up here today. Zach Edey's number 15 jersey was retired by Purdue yesterday. I don't recall seeing a retired jersey while the player's still active before.
I don't recall seeing it either. It is very odd, but listen, if anybody deserves it, it's him. The guy's about to be the back-to-back player of the year winner. I mean, he's...
For the first time since what, Ralph Sampson did it?
Yeah, Ralph Sampson, yeah. I mean, he's the guy's a freak show. And Purdue's had some great players in their history. Glenn Big Dog Robinson, I don't know if you remember him making his tournament runs. But they've had some great players. I think Zach Edey may be the best of them.
Also over the weekend on Saturday, North Carolina got the sweep of Duke, winning in Cameron Indoor. And does that mean that UNC is going to, like, do they lock up a 1 seed in your mind?
No, they don't. They still have work to do because Arizona is still in the mix, and Tennessee is still in the mix.
So we think UConn, Purdue, and Houston are locks. They're 1 seeds.
I believe that, yeah.
And then it's between Tennessee, North Carolina, and Arizona for the other 1 seed?
I think so, yep.
Okay. And who do you think has the best chance to get that 1 seed?
I mean, I'll say this. North Carolina has got a really good shot, a really good path, in my opinion, to win the Big East. To win the ACC. Because when you look at that bracket, there's 3 tournament teams from the ACC, like 3 NCAA tournament teams. Virginia and Wake Forest and Pitt are all bubble teams. So let's just say they're not certain. But Virginia is the closest. And when you look at that bottom side of the bracket, Duke, Virginia, and Clemson are all on that bottom half of the bracket. Mm-hmm. North Carolina's got a really easy path to get to the final of this thing. If they can win the ACC, it certainly goes a long way. And I just did a college basketball pod last night with Griffin Warner. You can check that out here on this feed or on, you know, wherever you get it normally on RJ Bell's Dream Preview feed sometimes. I picked Tennessee. I would have loved to pick Tennessee to win this tournament. I've said all season long, Tennessee is my favorite SEC team. But what Kentucky did this weekend was so impressive that I started to take Kentucky more seriously. And Tennessee's plus 130 to win that tournament. Kentucky's plus 400. For two teams that I think are basically a coin flip, if they get to a championship game, I have to take the 4-1. So I think if Kentucky wins the SEC and North Carolina wins the ACC, the door is open for North Carolina to get that one seed.
Yeah, let me update those odds here. So SEC tournament winner, Tennessee is a plus 130 favorite. Auburn plus 260 as the second favorite. Kentucky 400 as the third favorite. In the ACC, North Carolina a slight favorite over Duke. North Carolina plus 150, Duke plus 160. If these two teams match up again for a third time this season, I mean, is the story going to be, oh, it's so hard to beat a team three times in 1 year?
I feel like that's been disproven. I always hear that. Okay. I actually, when I handicap these conference tournaments, if I see a team beat you at their house and your house, mm-hmm. I just assume they're just that much better than you. So mm-hmm. I don't know about against the spread, but I think when a team wins twice, it tells me there's something about that matchup that unless there was some sort of injury. But to me, it says a lot about the matchup and how they pair up against each other.
All right, AJ, we promised the folks, we teased them a little bit last week. We were going to give out some conference tournament futures we'll call it the Power Five, I guess. The power conferences get underway. The majors, not the mid-majors or the low majors, the majors get underway here. So what's your first play that you're looking at?
Well, my first one will be that Kentucky at 4-1.
Plus 400, okay.
Yeah, we kind of just went over the reasons why, but I do think that this is a team that's improving. They've got three superstar shooters, and the worry is always, man, what if you have a bad shooting night? And that's always possible, but it's hard for me to imagine the three shooters in Reeves, Dillingham, and Shepard that Kentucky has, including Reed Shepard's the best three-point shooter in the country. He's over 50% on the season. It's hard for me to picture a world where all three of those guys go cold on the same night. And as long as it's just one or two of them, they still have a path to offense. And Kentucky's game has traveled. They've played really well outside of Rupp. So I do think there's some decent value in that team. I looked at, and this isn't, I won't call this a best bet. This is a sprinkle for me. The Pac-12 tournament is basically Arizona versus the field. Arizona's minus 160. Mm-hmm. The next favorite is Washington State and Colorado are both 5-1. But I looked at UCLA at 45-1, and it feels like there's some slight value on that team, mostly just because I feel like they're a team that's underperformed this season. And I look around the rest of the odds, and it's like, oh, USC's 35-1. UCLA's better than USC. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think that UCLA will make the run and win it, but their path to get there is okay. All you got to do is basically upset Arizona, and you got a shot because everything else lines up really well for them. They're the fifth seed, which means they're the only team. Or they're the best team that doesn't get a bye into the second round. So they do have to play that extra game, but at 45-1, I feel like it's worth a sprinkle. I'll say that.
By the way, I'm doing some research looking at the last times that Duke and North Carolina played three times in the same season. And it would be in 2022, they met up in the Final Four. You remember that in New Orleans?
Yeah.
And that was actually, it wasn't a sweep because Duke won. They split the regular season matchup, but then North Carolina won in the Final Four. Before that, you have to go to the ACC tournament in 2018. But again, that was a regular season split. The last time ACC tournament back in 2011, that was a regular season split. There hasn't been a time, like, it's been a while since we had a sweep, and that's Duke going back to the early 2000s when Duke won both regular season matchups and an ACC tournament matchup where one of these teams has swept three games in the one season against the other team. So again, that goes back to 2002, the last time that happened, AJ.
It doesn't happen often then. So maybe it's a ballsier play than I would think, but to me, North Carolina is just a better team than these guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Well, and the other thing about the ACC is it's hard for me to imagine someone besides those two teams being in the final, yeah, because I just think that the rest of the ACC is so weak. I've got one more I want to give out. And it's sort of a high mid-major. The Mountain West, which, I mean, we've talked about, there's six teams with a chance to make the tournament. Seven, if UNLV, I mean, if they keep doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with Nevada at 5-1. You can find they're between 5-1 and 7-1, but 5-1 is what we've got at DraftKings, which is, I'm just trying to keep it standard across the board here. If you're betting any futures, you should shop around because you're wasting money if you don't. And if you only have one out, you probably shouldn't be betting futures anyway, because you're not getting the best of the number. But Nevada, after a pretty rough start to the season, they were 3-4 to start out. They finished 10-1, including 9-2 ATS over their last 11 games. They've been one of the best teams in the country, you know, in the last 10-12 games. So I think this is a team who, they've got good size, they've got good guard play. This is a team that's pretty complete. Uh-huh. It is a very wide open tournament, and I don't want to say they are a great offense. They're a good offense. Their defense is very legit. The only problem is they got a tough draw on the bracket. They've got Colorado State, New Mexico, Boise all on that bracket, and Nevada they're going to have to play two of those teams to get to the championship game. But I am a fan of how they're playing right now. So Nevada's at 5-1, I think, is a good value to win the Mountain West.
Yeah, San Diego State, the favorite in that tournament, plus 260. Utah State, plus 425. Nevada, 5-1. Our UNLV Running Rebels, plus 550. Real quick, just going down some of the other major conference tournaments that are getting underway. The Big 12 Conference, Houston, a minus 135 favorite. Iowa State, the second favorite, at plus 280. And then it goes all the way down to Baylor at plus 800 is the third favorite. Are you surprised at that big of a drop off from the first two teams?
I am a little, mostly because I think this is a really wide open tournament, and there's a couple reasons why. For one, I think you can throw Kansas out. Kansas is around 12-1. I don't think there's any value on Kansas, because I don't think they've got any motivation to play either McCullough or Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson separated his shoulder in the season finale against Houston over the weekend, which, by the way, Houston first half cashed again easy. It's an ATM at home this season. They just didn't lose one, I don't think. But Houston and Iowa State are both, don't get me wrong, both very, very good teams, but both super dependent on their home floor. Like, both have great home court advantages, and obviously this tournament's not going to be played on their home court. So I think they're maybe being a little bit overpriced. I think Baylor shows a little bit of value at 8-1. I'd take a sprinkle on BYU at 15-1. They would have to play Houston, because they're on the same side of the bracket as Houston. But BYU, just like when they won at Kansas, if they get hot from outside, because they've got five shooters on the floor basically at all times, if they have a good shooting night, they can beat anyone in the country, and that includes Houston. So that physicality edge that Houston have is a little bit downplayed, because BYU is not interested in going down into the paint and banging with you. So if they get a good night from outside, they can beat anybody. And at 15-1, they may be worth a shot for me.
Pac-12, Arizona minus 160, Colorado plus 500, Washington State also plus 500. In the Big East, UConn minus 135, Creighton plus 425. Marquette plus 500. Will we see Tyler Kolek for Marquette in the Big East tourney?
That's the big question, and I don't know the answer to it. I will say this. I would love to bet Marquette to win the tournament if Tyler Kolek plays and is himself. Mm-hmm. But Marquette, much like I was talking about with some of these other teams, they're probably a two seed. Like unless they lose their very first game in the conference tournament, they're probably a two seed. To me, it's more important for them to be healthy going into the NCAA tournament than it is
to win
the Big East. So that points me to some value on Creighton. I don't think UConn should be a minus 135. I don't think they should be minus money in this strong of a conference. But if you look at Creighton at plus 425 and you assume that their path has to go through Marquette and you also assume that Tyler Kolek's unlikely to play, then suddenly it feels like you're getting Creighton at sort of a discount, because Creighton against a hobbled Marquette, I would choose them pretty handily. And then I think that UConn would likely have to play Seton Hall in round two, and Seton Hall's a very physical team. Those are the kind of games that, you know, you get beat up in. Maybe you get UConn limping in, and again, another UConn team who they're not going to prioritize winning the Big East over going into the conference tournament or into the NCAA tournament healthy. I think there may be some value on Creighton here, although as is documented, Creighton is a team that's been very frustrating for me this season.
Yes. In the Big Ten, Purdue is the favorite at even money. Illinois is 3-1 as the second favorite, and then a big drop off. Nebraska, a third favorite at plus 700. You know, when you look at Illinois, who yesterday went on the road, won at Iowa, 73-61.
Yep.
Can they beat Purdue on a neutral?
I want to say yes, but I also thought Illinois could beat Purdue at Illinois, and they couldn't.
They couldn't do it.
I mean,
yeah.
It really is like who can stop this guy? Who can stop this team? In the Big Ten, and I'm just not sure that anyone can, like, especially if they're not getting a home whistle, because that's the way to beat Zach Edey, is to get a home whistle and have a lot of fouls called on him and let him get roughed up when he's got the ball. So when I take that out of the equation and it's a neutral whistle, I just think Purdue's too much. I'm not going to bet Purdue at even money to win the Big Ten, because I think the Big Ten's a solid league. I think there's some good team. I don't know if there's any other great teams, although Illinois is on the right day, Illinois can be great. But I just don't see enough value in Purdue to bet them, but I'm not picking anybody else in that conference. Like, no one else interests me enough. Like, Michigan State's the fourth favorite. I don't even think Michigan State should be in the tournament. I'm selfishly hoping they are, because I want to bet against them in their first game. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're any good at all. They lose to Indiana today. In a game that, I mean, Indiana, the wheels have fallen off basically. And Michigan State, if they would have won that game at Indiana yesterday, they probably find themselves locked into an at-large. And because they didn't, now they're back in this weird bubble status area. But that's the fourth favorite in the conference. If that's the fourth favorite, I'm not finding anyone who I'm going to say, yep, that's the team to beat Purdue.
All right, well, the big conferences get underway tomorrow and Wednesday, really the two biggest days for the first rounds for these big conference tournaments. Tonight, just two top 25 teams in action, both in the West Coast Conference semifinals here in Vegas. Number 23, St. Mary's, a 9.5-point favorite over Santa Clara. And number 19, Gonzaga, 8.5-point favorites over San Francisco. Are we destined for another St. Mary's-Gonzaga championship game, AJ?
Yeah, we are. Santa Clara is... They are the team that beats up everybody who's not the top three seeds in that conference. Like, they've handled business against basically everybody except Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and San Francisco. So I don't see why that changes. I don't see why they figure things out. Although they did beat San Francisco at home to finish the regular season. But they're not going to beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga. They're just not on that level. And then Gonzaga's won like a million games in a row against San Francisco. It's death taxes, and Gonzaga beats San Francisco. So I can't picture a world in my head where San Francisco knocks them off. So I think we're destined for the same thing we get most years, a Gonzaga-St. Mary's WCC final.
Gonzaga all time in our database going back to 2007, 39-3 straight up against San Francisco.
When's the last time that San Francisco got a win?
February 18th, 2012.
Yeah. It's if you're betting against that tonight, good luck.
So that means that since 2012, it's 27 straight wins for Gonzaga over San Francisco.
What a wild statistic. And they play two times every year, at least two times every year. They just own that squad.
Taking a look at the NBA results from yesterday, a busy Sunday in the association. The Bucks defeating the Clippers 124-117. Good matchup there. Damian Lillard with 35 points, 7 rebounds, and 11 assists. Pelicans top the Hawks 116-103. It was the Wizards over the Heat 110-108. Pacers top the Magic 111-97. Rockets beat the Kings 112-104. But AJ, Rockets fans holding their breath. Alperen Şengün went down with a knee injury. He's going to have further evaluation. It didn't look good. I don't want to like speculate, but
yeah,
he had to be taken off the court in a wheelchair and obviously will undergo more tests.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, this is a Houston team that is building for the future. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. But he seems to be like the building block. This is the guy that they're building their franchise around now. Despite the original thought that it was going to be Jalen Green or someone like that, this is the guy that they see as the future of their franchise. So obviously, you know, they've got their fingers and toes crossed that he's okay. This is a huge blow to them, but again, they're currently about 5 games out of the last play-in spot. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It's unlikely they were going to make the playoffs this year anyway.
Well, but if that's the case, then you got to shut them down for the year if there's any doubt.
That's my thought. Like, handle it with kid gloves. If there's any way that he hurts himself further, it's been like, hey, you had a great season. One of the most improved players in the NBA. He's becoming a legitimate star. Why don't you just take the rest of this year off? Mm-hmm.
Elsewhere, the Sixers and Knicks played a 1990s game. 76ers win 79-73. And when I say 1990s, I mean it had that physicality. Dante DiVincenzo threw Kelly Oubre to the ground. It was pushing and shoving. It felt like an old-school 90s basketball game. The Nets beat
Garrett
the Cavs.
Coleman and Anthony Mason just banging
exactly.
The whole time.
Yes, yes. Nets beat the Cavs 120-101. Thunder topped the Grizzlies 124-93. And the Lakers edged out the Timberwolves 121-109. Anthony Davis with 27 points. AJ, 25 rebounds.
That's good.
AD.
That's a good day. Good day at the office.
25 rebounds? Is that like the leader on the Timberwolves was Anthony Edwards with 7 rebounds?
Yeah.
Anthony Davis had 25.
How many could there have been to go around? There were none to go around. Anthony Davis took them all.
You're right. Although it was spread out, though. He had 10 offensive rebounds, 15 defensive rebounds.
Very impressive.
So he spread it out. But definitely filled up the stat sheet.
Three blocks as well. Good night for AD.
Here's what's going on tonight in the NBA. Hornets are at the Pistons. Detroit, a 3.5-point favorite.
Yes.
We have a 10-win Detroit against 16-win Charlotte. And Detroit 3.5-point favorites. That's got to be like a system play, right?
I don't know. I'm not touching that play.
Suns are at the Cavs. Phoenix laying 5.5. Mavericks visit the Bulls. Dallas a 5.5-point favorite. Does Luka continue the hot streak?
I don't see why not, man. This dude is just on an absolute tear. I've talked about him. If the team were any better, I think he'd get a lot more love for MVP. But as it stands, their team is just so bad. It's hard for me to picture them, you know, giving him that trophy. But
yeah,
man,
he's still the third favorite at 7-1.
But for the individual stuff, the guy is on a wild tear. I mean, he's outscoring everybody. This is like, it kind of reminds me of when James Harden played for the Rockets and the Rockets weren't good, but he was just putting up, you know, 35, 40 points a night. That's how Luka feels right now.
Yep. Elsewhere, the Warriors are at the Spurs. Golden State, 5.5-point favorites. Raptors visit the Nuggets. Denver laying 13.5. And the Celtics are at the Blazers. Boston, 9.5-point favorites. Short schedule in the NHL. Yesterday, Oilers blanked the Penguins 4-0. In overtime, the Wild got by the Predators 4-3. Hurricanes a 7-2 win over the Flames. Blackhawks a 7-4 win over the Coyotes. And the Islanders blew out the Ducks 6-1. Here's what you're looking at tonight. The Blues visit the Bruins. Boston minus 230. Devils are at the Rangers. And New York, a minus 150 favorite. Now, watch out for the goaltending matchup in this one. If it's Igor Shesterkin against, like, let's say, Nico Dawes, the Rangers should probably be more heavily favored than minus 150. Shesterkin, I gave him out at 30-1 to win the Vezina Trophy for the best goaltender award. His odds are still, they're even longer than that now. And I don't understand why. Like, he's 50-1 right now. And I get it. Like, guys, like, Hellebuck's had an amazing season. Demko's played well. Like, those guys deserve to be up there. But is no one watching what Igor Shesterkin has done over the last 10 games? Like, he's 8-1-1 with a 1.0 goals against average in his last 10 starts. Like, you want to talk about, like, if he continues this run, we haven't seen this is one of the great runs that you're seeing right now from a goaltender. Like, that, let me read you his goals against in the last, let's say, we'll go back to maybe the All-Star break, right? 0-3-3-1-1-1-1. 5 in the Islander game. 0-3. Yeah. He's got, in February, he posted a 1.72 goals against average and a 9.53 save percentage in February. And he's given up 6 goals in 3 games in March. He's playing great right now, and that's a good sign for the Rangers. I like this Rangers team. This might be one of the better equipped Rangers team, and they've had some good ones that have gone to Eastern Conference Finals multiple years in a row recently. But this might be the best equipped team for a postseason run. Elsewhere, the Capitals are at the Jets. Oh, and I mentioned watch the goaltending matchup in this one because the Devils traded for 2 goaltenders. Kapanen, right, from the Sharks. So they have him, he could play for the Devils. And they also got Jake Allen from Montreal. So the Devils made, they have a 3 goaltender rotation right now. So you have to keep an eye on what that rotation is going to look like. And how long will it be a 3-man rotation? Because that is not ideal for anyone. So keep an eye on who is going to get the start for the Devils in that one tonight, which one of the 3 goaltenders will make the appearance. Elsewhere, the Jets minus 210 favorites over the Capitals, and the Islanders on the second of a back-to-back doing that LA double dip. Anaheim first, now LA. They are dogs, as the Kings are minus 155. One other nugget, Flyers coach John Tortorella suspended 2 games for his conduct on the bench in their most recent game against Tampa. So tomorrow, I believe, the Flyers will host the Sharks without their head coach John Tortorella on the bench.
I think they'll be okay with him without him against the Sharks. I wanted to ask you about the finish to the Wild Predators game, where the Minnesota Wild basically realize they're in overtime, they're doing the 3-on-3 thing, and Minnesota pulled their goalie and went 4-on-3 and got the goal and walked it off that way. And basically the thought process was, Minnesota is, pretty far out of the last playoff spot right now. They're the ninth team in the West, but they're a good ways back of the eighth team. And they're like, getting, a 1 point wasn't going to be good enough. So, it's a really gutsy move. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, I don't think I've ever seen that. And you know what the crazy thing is like, there's a rule built in for this, AJ, where once you pull the goalie in overtime, if the other team scores while you have the net empty, so like let's say Nashville would have stole the puck and then scored with Marc-Andre Fleury on the bench, then the Wild would actually lose the 1 point that they got by going into overtime.
Oh, wow.
So it's like they risk the 1 point to try and get the extra point, to try and get the 2 points. And it's a risk that Hines was willing to take, because if you look at the projections in the standings, they're on pace for 87 points. If they win their remaining 17 games, they'll have 103. Now, it's highly unlikely you're going to win 17 in a row. Hey, listen, stranger things have happened. But they can only afford to lose maybe 5 or 6 points the rest of the season. That's assuming that Nashville and VGK keep up their pace, because both the Knights and Preds are on pace for like 96 points. But yeah, it's crazy because they could have lost 1 point, and you would say every point is valuable, but they saw an opportunity to get the second point, and it was a risk-reward situation, and they decided to risk that 1 point in order to get 2 points instead of one. So, hey, gutsy call, right? Fortune favors the bold, they say, AJ.
Yeah, I mean, they had to have it, like you said.
And in case you were wondering, up on the DraftKings Sportsbook, the Minnesota Wild to make the playoffs, plus 600. So the odds not in their favor.
But hey, they're better than they were if they wouldn't have gotten that extra point last night. I'll say that.
Exactly, exactly. The odds could be in your favor at pregame.com. You can take advantage of the promo codes we're offering, where you can save $15 off any single purchase. Use the promo code ZONE15, ZONE15. That's going to get you $15 off your purchase at pregame.com. Did daylight savings time mess you up yesterday?
No, not too bad. I mean, I slept in a little bit, but you know, it could have been worse. How about that?
But when you woke up, did you like realize that it was like an hour later? So like, if you thought you woke up at 9, you really woke up at 10?
No, because like, I think now I don't do that anymore because my phone is my alarm clock.
So it's always the correct time.
It changes automatically. But yeah. I remember in the old days when you had like just a digital alarm clock and you had to change the clock, you could feel it differently.
Yeah. Well, I loved it because the dog usually gets me up at like 6:37 for breakfast, and it was an hour later. So it was actually nice. It's actually 7:45. I was like, good boy. Good boy. Well, for AJ Hoffman, I'm Scott Seidenberg. We are Straight Out of Vegas AM.